unconscious. Jane, Bud McElroy can't be the person who shot you. And he's not the one who's been harassing you. He's been dead for weeks.
I swear I didn't do it, I said, dropping the paper. It wasn't me.
Of course it wasn't you. Trees fall. Mr. McElroy had the bad luck of standing under it at the time.
And that doesn't strike you as convenient? I asked.
No. It was a terrible inconvenience to push a very heavy tree on top of Mr. McElroy.
I gaped at him, the salty, sweet gorge of faux blood rising in my throat.
You killed him, I whispered.
He sat there, still as stone, as he stared at me. Looking back, this may have been Gabriel's way of saying, duh.
Say something, I yelled. You can't just tell me how inconvenient it was to shove a tree on top of a living human being and then not say anything. Please tell me, just say something.
He hurt you, Gabriel said, his eyes flashing silver even in the dim light. He left you to die like some animal and just went on living his life.
He thought I was an animal. How could you do that?
You weren't trying to feed or to defend yourself, I whimpered, shrinking away. You murdered him.
And you would have let him live?
He followed me into the living room, clearly irked that I didn't appreciate what was probably considered a romantic gesture in the vampire world.
You would have let him go unpunished for what he did? Let him hurt other innocent people?
I will not pretend that I'm sad to see Bud McElroy dead, I admitted. A part of me hates him for what he did to me. I'm glad that he will never be able to hurt anyone else, but I wouldn't have had any human die that way. It's cruel and vicious, and it's beneath you, Gabriel, with all your noble creature of the night bullshit. Don't you dare think you did this for me. Plus, I'm already suspected of setting other vampires on fire. I don't need a human murder charge on my head. Did you even think about that?
No one will connect it to you because no one knows McElroy was responsible for shooting you, he said. There was never any report, any evidence.
Damned if he didn't have a point there. So instead of following logic, I demanded, why wait until now?
I gave him time to forget what had happened, if he even remembered it in the first place. I watched him. I let him settle back into his drunken, useless, wasted life, and when he least expected anything, I extinguished it.
His voice, the absence of passion or any sort of feeling about the fact that he had snuffed out a human life, chilled me to my marrow. My hands began to shake. I bunched them into fists, flexing the fingers to try to pump warmth into the joints.
What about me makes you think I would be okay with that? What makes you think I would find that acceptable? What happened to not taking things humans do personally? Taking the good with the bad?
This is different.
How is it different? I demanded.
He hurt you, Gabriel shouted, stepping closer to me.
I backed away, but he pursued me, backing me up against the edge of my writing desk.
He left you to die. What about me makes you think I would find that acceptable?
Back off. I shoved him away. Well, I tried. He was pretty much unmovable.
He didn't know he'd shot me, Gabriel. He wasn't an evil man, just a stupid drunk who didn't know any better. No matter what kind of person he was still human, and you've made me responsible for his death. You said you didn't want to give me experiences to regret, but this is a big freaking regret.
I know you're upset, but I hope that someday you will understand why I did this. You will understand what you mean to me. I will do anything to keep you safe. Anything.
He reached for me. For the first time since I'd known him, he looked unsure, unsteady. Probably because I slapped his hands away. Don't touch me. Just get away from me. He seemed vaguely amused by this.
You haven't minded me touching you in the past.
In fact, even as I punched him in the mouth, I couldn't believe I'd done it. For one thing, the deep scrape of Gabriel's fangs against my knuckles was excruciating. And two, I'd never really hit anyone before and meant it, besides the usual sibling brawls and the unfortunate Walter encounter. Gabriel sprawled across the floor, sliding across the polished wood until he hit a wall. I was this close to helping him up and apologizing profusely when he snarled up at me, which just made me hit him again.
I think I had some anger issues I needed to work out. My fangs extended, nicking my lip. The taste of my own blood only stoked my temper, tinging the edges of my vision a hot, glossy crimson. The shock of his spastic child being coordinated enough to land a blow had plainly disoriented Gabriel. As he stumbled to his feet, I flew at him and knocked him back down. I kicked him again, but he swept an arm out and knocked my legs out from under me. From my position on the floor, I kicked at him as he rose, pushing him against the wall. But as I tried to gain advantage, he used my momentum to slam me against the wall instead.
"Good. Good," he hissed, pinning my wrists. "This is what we are, Jane. This isn't some fairy story. It's not one of your books. You could pretend you didn't know this was in your nature, but you'd be lying to yourself and to me. You've known ever since the night you rose. You sensed it under the surface. We're predators, Jane. We hunt, we feed, and we kill." I strained against his grip, but he was too strong, slapping my useless hands against the plaster. He smirked as he drew in for a kiss, then seemed to think better of it, unsure whether I would chew on him, in a bad way.
"You talk too much," I grumbled, seizing his mouth. There was a pleased purring sound in his chest as his fingers slipped up my wrists and intertwined with mine. He let me shove away from the wall, and we stumbled backward, tripping over my leaded glass coffee table and sending shards of glass exploding over the floor as we fell. Gabriel rolled, trapping me between the solid weight of his body and the unyielding floor. His stare pinned me as much as the knees pressed against my thighs. I wanted him without thinking. I didn't care that I had crazy wet hair or that I was wearing underwear featuring cartoon ladybugs. I didn't care if I was kissing him the right way. I didn't care if the sex might be bad. I just wanted. Still wrapped around him, I used all of the strength in my legs to roll over him, pin him to the floor. His eyes flashed as I strained to keep him held there. He was enjoying this, watching me struggle. My hair curled in wild, damp ropes over my face as I crouched over him, scraping my fingers along the edges of his bared torso. His palm curled around my chin, forcing me to look him in the eyes. He grinned. He wanted me. He wanted me to touch him, finally take control. He took my hand in his and pressed it against his chest. He was so smooth, pale, hairless, and cool as marble, sculpted from years of whatever manual labor a 19th-century planter's son performed. I ran my fingertips along the lines of his chest to his sides, giving in to the urge to kiss the skin just below his belly button. The muscles of his abdomen bunched. He was ticklish. That had possibilities. I chuckled as my hand snaked down his body and wrapped tight around the length of him. His hips bucked, and his eyes widened as he looked down at me. Sensing his shock, I grinned back at him. Gabriel moaned and pulled me into another kiss that had me reeling. In the tussle, my robe had come completely off, though somehow the belt was still tied in a tight, damp knot that refused to give. I pulled at it frantically. Gabriel laughed and ripped the material away easily. He dragged my bra down to my waist, making me shriek when he gently bit the curve of my breast, drawing blood into his mouth the way human men might worship a nipple. He threw me back to the floor, and I cried out as shards of glass sliced into my back. Then Gabriel's good, strong hands found the round weight of my cotton-clad rear and rocked me against him, showing me just how much he wanted me. Gabriel's lips skimmed my hip bones, my personal Achilles heel, and I let loose a very girly squeal. I could feel the bow of his smile against my skin as he peeled away my panties. His hands explored lower, and I moaned gibberish as he slipped testing fingers into my warmth. Gabriel slid between my knees, holding them firmly apart while he played me, stroking and coaxing while I chased his movements with my hips. It had been so long since I'd been touched, and I was shamefully ready. Within moments, I was throwing my head back and screaming his name as I shattered from the inside out. Later, I would take the time to be embarrassed at my hair trigger response and the fact that I actually whined when he moved his hand away from me. I wrapped my legs around his waist, terrified of losing the sensations he was giving me. Gabriel chuckled, and kissing me with a gentleness that seemed impossible given our foreplay activities, he moved into me, testing how much I could take. I grabbed at his hips, needing more. He reared back and sank his fangs into my throat, thrusting up until he was completely inside me. He drank from my throat as he moved slowly,
timing each thrust to draw out the pleasant ache I felt every time he came back to me. I brought his wrist to my lips and sank my teeth into the spot just under his palm, all the while staring him down. It was a dark starburst on the tongue, singing to my senses in a way bottled blood never could. It was the sensation of his blood flooding my system that pushed me over the edge. My fingernails bit into his shoulders as I convulsed around him.
"Mine," he whispered to my skin. "Mine. Mine."
I lay there, boneless and sated, while he began moving in earnest, reaching for his own climax. Each stroke was more forceful, driving me into the floor. Using what strength I had, I pushed back, forcing him to work harder, fight for control. Eyes lit with some awful pride, he finally shook under me. He leaned his forehead against mine as his body stilled. For a minute, it was almost normal. We lay there, wound around each other, my face resting on his chin. My head was empty, drained of all worries. I didn't care what came next, as long as I was able to feel this way every once in a while. Then I wondered how much it would scare a man to tell him he'd given you your first ever orgasm achieved with the help of another person. Then I realized we were lying on the broken shards of what used to be my coffee table. I was stunned by what I'd done. I was a big, undead skank. My feelings for Gabriel were a dirty gray miasma of lust, resentment, and the psychotic devotion of a teenage crush. Add to that the fact that I was still angry with him about his ironic vigilante routine. I couldn't stand what he'd done. He'd killed a man in cold blood, and I'd responded by having sex with him. What sort of degenerate did that make me? I lay there, the broken glass slicing into my skin, wondering what to do. Did we cuddle? Was I supposed to offer him breakfast? I wasn't exactly well-versed in the post-coital ritual of the living, much less that of the undead. I tried to reach out to his mind, pick up any emotion Gabriel might be feeling. Nothing. Stupid, inconsistent powers. So I stared at the ceiling and prayed to the good Lord that Gabriel would say something, anything, to keep me from having to bridge the uncomfortable silence. Maybe I could fake going to sleep? Sure, it was 2:34 a.m., the vampire equivalent of midday, but a sexual effort like that deserved a cat nap, right? Plus, I'd lost a lot of blood earlier in the evening. "If you don't get up off the glass, your skin's going to heal over it. It will itch for decades." That was not what I expected. He shifted to his feet, shaking debris out of his hair. His skin was ruddier, suffused with my blood. He looked almost tan. That must have been what he looked like in life, minus the splinters of table sticking out of his back. Gabriel made a hesitant grab for his pants and slid them on.
"Are you all right?"
"Don't go all prom date on me, Gabriel," I said, my voice harder than I intended. I got up, leaving a wake of glass tinkling to the floor. I grabbed my robe and yanked it over my back. "My father isn't going to show up on your doorstep with a shotgun and a preacher." He touched my arm and made me turn to face him.
"In light of what's happened, I think you should come stay with me for a while."
"I don't think moving in together is the answer to our problems."
"We don't have problems," Gabriel insisted.
"You killed someone."
"I killed someone for you."
"Well, pardon me if I don't think that's going to make it into the next collection of Hallmark cards," I cried. "And don't think that this changes anything," I growled, fangs creaking to full length. I closed my eyes, tamping my temper down. "We are not back to normal, whatever normal is for us. I just don't want to be around you right now. I think you'd better go." Well, if punching him in the face didn't hurt him, that certainly did. His lips parted, but he pressed them back together, reconsidering saying something that would probably piss me off even more.
"Jane, please, we can talk about this," he said, stepping toward me.
When he saw the anguish on my face, he stopped.
"I'll call you."
"Please don't." The door clicked shut behind him. Well, at least that wasn't weird.
I scrubbed a hand over my face and surveyed the damage to my living room. Chipped bric-a-brac, a shattered table, and a scrambled brain. And I didn't know where my underwear was. Chapter 19. Remember, you're much more flammable now than you were in life, so live every day as if you're soaked in gasoline. From the Guide for the Newly Undead. Sometime between my sustaining multiple gunshot wounds and losing my panties, Dick had called my cell phone to leave me a cryptic voicemail message.
"Hey, Jane, it's Dick," he said,
his voice unusually quiet and subdued.
"Do you think you could stop by my place sometime tonight? I need to talk to you."
It was almost 4 by the time I heard the voicemail, and Dick wasn't answering his phone, so I risked some early morning exposure to drive to his trailer. Because if I was at home, I would be cleaning up broken glass and thinking about what I had decided to call the incident. My phone rang as I jogged up the steps to Dick's trailer. The caller ID said it was Gabriel. I debated picking it up, but finally hit the ignore button. I knocked on the door and...
whoomph.
Red and gold stars exploded at the base of my skull as I was blown off Dick's porch and onto the hood of my car. My frustration at being thrown through yet another windshield was superseded by the fact that my sleeves were on fire. It seemed to be a more pressing concern. I slapped them out just before a secondary explosion knocked me back again. The blast threw me off the car, thwacking the back of my head against the cement block supporting a nearby El Camino. The flames burned orange behind my eyelids. I slipped into a soft, black place where the burns on my arms didn't leave me screaming. I was still able to be knocked unconscious. That was comforting. What was not comfortable was the cot I was currently chained to. I was lying in a dimly lit room that smelled of bleach and cement dust. Someone had taken the time to remove my smoldering clothes and put me in blue hospital scrubs. I jerked at the handcuffs binding my wrists and shrieked. Though healing, the burns on my arms were the color and texture of barely cooked hamburger.
"Ugh, I am fortune's bitch," I moaned.
Not exactly Shakespeare, I'm aware, but I was operating with a concussion. I sniffed at the chains. Under the tang of steel, I smelled something stronger. "They're reinforced with titanium," a smooth young female voice informed me from the darkness.
"Fortune's bitch," I said again.
Ophelia was sitting in a folding chair in the corner. Her fangs glinted as she offered a thin smile. "You do have a way with words."
"What's going on?"
I asked, trying to sit up. My very sensitive equilibrium told me this was a bad idea.
"Who let the mariachi band loose in my head?"
Ophelia, who I could now see was wearing an obscenely short plaid skirt and a schoolgirl blouse, crossed to the foot of my bed. "I told you to behave yourself. I told you to stay under the radar."
"I did,"
I protested, the slightest hint of a whine creeping into my voice.
"Then how do you explain your being found unconscious outside a burning trailer belonging to one of the oldest vampires in the region?"
"Not that again."
"Look, for the last time, I didn't do anything. I walked up to the door and the trailer exploded.
Wait, was Dick inside? Is he dead?" There were the shark eyes again, which were even scarier when they were flashing at me from the dark.
"Considering the hour, we're assuming he was inside. Of course, we wouldn't find him if he was inside. The fire would reduce him to dust. The question is, why were you stupid enough to knock yourself out before you were able to leave the scene of the crime?"
The terror was giving way to anger, which I assumed was a good sign. I demanded,
"Why would I set Dick on fire?"
"Why would you set Walter on fire?" she asked.
"I didn't set Walter on fire,"
I shouted.
"Give me an explanation, Jane. Give me something to take back to the other council members, to the vampires who will demand justice. Give me some plausible reason for 2 men you are rumored to be involved with, whether that involvement is real or imagined, it won't matter to the community, having both been set on fire. Explain why you were found outside Dick's burning trailer after you were recently seen having a lover's quarrel with him at a party."
"That wasn't a lover's quarrel, that was a friendly conversation."
You were seen hitting him repeatedly. It was a friendly conversation that involved me hitting him repeatedly.
Ophelia didn't look convinced.
I sighed. What's going to happen to me?
Is a vampire detective going to come in here and question me with a phone book and a rubber hose?
I could see the amusement reach her eyes, but she refused to smile.
A tribunal has been called to discuss your case. Depending on the outcome of that discussion, you may have a trial tomorrow.
A trial? I repeated before realization dawned. The trial? Wait, don't I get a lawyer or a phone call or something?
No, she said, uncuffing me. I sat up slowly. She was across the room and out of my reach in a glimmer of movement. Where was the trust?
You're accused of immolating two of your own kind. The Bill of Rights no longer applies to you.
She turned toward the door, then whirled back on me. She stood by the cot, peering down at me with those glowing black eyes.
I regret this. You seem to be an interesting vampire.
Then don't do this, I yelled. Stop making an example of me for other young vampires. I'm a terrible example. More weird stuff happens to me in a week than is foisted upon the average person in an entire lifetime.
I regret this, she repeated. But I also regret the loss of Dick Cheney. Once upon a time, we were close acquaintances.
Am I the only person in the Hollow who hasn't slept with Dick Cheney?
Possibly, she admitted.
Sorry, I said. Shrugging my shoulders was a painful gesture that let me know there were bits of glass embedded somewhere near my shoulder blade. Gabriel was right. It itched.
Gabriel.
My sire, Gabriel Nightingale, does he know I'm here? I asked as she opened my cell door.
She nodded.
You're not allowed visitors, she said, shutting the very solid door behind her. And for the first time since being shot and left for dead, I was truly frightened. Whenever those horrible women-in-prison movies were played on Lifetime, I thought, what's the big deal about prison? I could handle solitary. Even if I couldn't read, I could daydream. I could write. I would take naps. Well, like many of my pre-death, preconceived notions, that one was destroyed. There was no window, so I couldn't tell whether it was day or night. There was no clock, so I never knew what time it was. I couldn't sleep because the healing burns on my arms itched like crazy. And my daydreams were interrupted by pesky questions such as, where is Gabriel? Why does this keep happening to me? Am I going to die for real this time? I spent half my time trying to figure out where the hell I was. When I pressed my ear against the wall, I could hear traffic. I heard voices at least 20 feet above my head, but I couldn't make out any actual words. And there was a rat somewhere in the plumbing. The only good thing I could say about the clink was that the blood, served in a paper cup shoved through a slot in my door, was fresh and tasty. It was also of an indeterminate origin, but I decided not to ask questions. I was halfway to drawing love and hate on my knuckles when Ophelia returned. She was wearing black silk pants and a top that may at one point have been a handkerchief. I stood up, grateful for any sort of interaction, even if it could mean I was facing a spookily titled punishment.
"Are you comfortable?" she asked, not sounding as if she actually cared.
"Bored, mostly. How long have I been in here?" I asked.
2 days? 3 days?
9 hours, she said, looking as if she were suppressing a giggle.
"Well, that's embarrassing," I muttered, scratching at my arms.
We sat there and stared at each other. It was like a staring contest with a really hot statue.
"Finally," she said, "the tribunal has voted against a trial."
I sat up, feeling something like hope rising.
"Really? That's good news."
"They voted against it because Missy has challenged you to trial by battle, which is her right as Dick's consort."
"You guys are just making this up as you go along," I cried. "Dick and Missy weren't even in a real relationship. Hell, if everyone he slept with could challenge me to a duel, I'd be fighting half the county. You could challenge..."
She crossed her arms and glared at me. Probably not good to give her ideas.
"Never mind," I said. "Is it going to be pistols at dawn? Swords at sundown? How does this trial-by-battle thing work?"
"The last battle was fought with sharpened snow shovels," she told me.
"Now I know you're screwing with me," I snorted.
Her expression didn't change.
"Oh, come on!"
"Missy will choose the weapon," Ophelia informed me. She's going to accessorize me to death? Or she can choose hand-to-hand combat, Ophelia nodded. I stand by my statement, I deadpanned. My arms finally healed up about an hour after Ophelia left me. She said she would come back an hour before my appointment with Missy, the grieving ex, to let me feed and update me on the duel arrangements. She even promised to serve as my second. How did I get to a point in my life where I needed a second? Semi-erotic fisticuffs with Gabriel aside, I didn't have any faith in my fighting skills. Walter had nearly splintered my skull with his bare hands, and from what I heard, he'd spent most of his time watching Battlestar Galactica in his mother's basement. After pacing, humming, yoga, and playing 6 degrees of Kevin Bacon with the entire cast of Good Times, exhaustion finally got to me, and I managed to fall asleep. I dreamed that I was walking along that long, dark country road and felt the pain of Bud McElroy's bullet all over again. Only instead of finding me and turning me, Gabriel drove by in a big black Cadillac. He laughed and pelted me with cigars and drove away. Anyone care to interpret that? I jolted awake, yelling, "Freud!" Dick was sitting in the corner of my cell, smirking at me.
I can't leave you alone for 2 seconds, can I?
Dick, I said, wiping an alarming amount of sleep drool from my cheek. Wait, are you a ghost? He sat on the cot and grasped my knee so I could feel he was substantial.
Nope, as undead as ever.
I removed his hand and put it back on his own knee. He gave me a blithe grin, which, Lord help me, made me hug him. He was clearly caught off guard by this, and after hesitating, gave me a completely innocent squeeze.
Hey, you're not trailer dust, I exclaimed, and your hand is on my knee again.
Sorry, he said, not looking the least bit so. And no, I'm not dust. I had a fireproof sleeping compartment built under the trailer a few years ago. I smelled the gas and jumped into it just in time.
Your sleeping compartment is fireproof?
I have my reasons, he said, feigning indignation. I just figured my place got torched by one of my less-than-civically-minded associates. I laid low for a while. I didn't know you'd been blamed for the whole thing until this evening when I heard about the duel. I couldn't leave you locked up, with the public showers and the shackles.
Shh, I said, holding a finger to his lips.
I'm glad you're okay. Let's not ruin that.
He kissed the fingertip, which I then used to tweak his nose. He caught my hand and smelled my skin. He cocked an eyebrow and smirked, then rolled his eyes. If he could smell Gabriel on my hair before we had sex.
If you say what is in your head right now, I will rescind my previous statement and kill you.
For real this time, I told him.
Speaking of that, how about I give you a ride home, he said. There's some stuff we need to talk about in private.
The stuff you cryptically referred to during your call? How did you get my cell phone number anyway?
We'll talk about that later, he said, dragging me to the door.
Dick, they're not just going to let me walk out of here. They think I tried to kill you. It's apparently one of the big no-nos.
And obviously, I'm not dead. No harm, no foul, Dick said.
That doesn't change the fact that someone tried to kill you and I'm still a prime suspect. I'm actually the only suspect, which I find insulting and surprising.
Look, I vouched for you, okay? I said there was no way you could have done this.
It took some convincing, but Ophelia has agreed to release you into my custody. They figure if you really did try to kill me, and somehow you end up mysteriously disappearing, it's a wash.
I don't want to know what you did to convince Ophelia, do I?
Dick smirked. Ophelia, Sophie, and Mr. Marchand were waiting in the hall, ready to offer me an apology on behalf of the council. Well, Sophie and Mr. Marchand were apologizing. I didn't need telepathy to know Ophelia would not bother with a trial-no-trial vote the next time I got into trouble. Dick managed to speed the process along and practically launched me through the entrance to the council office, which was actually a Kinko's. I felt silly walking through a weeknight crowd of people copying their tax records and hospital scrubs in bare feet, but the patrons seemed used to this sort of thing. Dick threw me into the front seat of his car, an old beat-up El Camino, and pulled out of town as quickly as our 2 stoplights would allow. I crossed my arms and spoke with overly sweet clarity.
Okay,
I'm getting tired of being thrown in and out of shitty situations because people withhold information from me. What were you calling to tell me about? And why couldn't you talk about it at the council gulag?
I couldn't talk about it before because I didn't know who was listening, he said, turning toward my house.
Look, Missy has it out for you. I found these papers in her briefcase. I was looking for a light while she was in the shower. She's got these sketches for a planned community thing out near your place. She's got a clubhouse smack in the middle of your backyard.
My head swam.
Use smaller sentences, please.
She wants to get her hands on River Oaks.
I grabbed the door handle, not sure if I could manage a Charlie's Angels roll on gravel. Stop the car.
Why?
Stop the car, I yelled. It took me a while, but I finally caught on. You call me over to your trailer to give me mysterious information. The trailer blows up. I'm framed for your murder. Missy challenges me to a duel and stands to inherit my property. Do the math, Dick. He stared at me and nearly ran the car off the road. Somewhere in Dick's brain, 10,000 chimpanzees had just typed the opening act of Hamlet.
Missy set fire to my trailer?
There you go. I resisted the urge to pat his head. He huffed.
Missy's determined, but she's not crazy.
She matches her cell phone case to her shoes, I yelled. That's one stop short of Hannibal Lecter territory in my book. And as I realized the true depth of my stupidity, I sputtered. Oh, for God's sake, there's no such thing as the new arrivals welcoming committee, is there?
No, actually there is, Dick said. I think she just does this other stuff as a side project.
Okay. Say Missy is the big, bad, blonde, evil force behind the shooting and the fires and the really hurtful rumors. How do I know that you're not in on all of this? I yelled. You could be luring me into some sort of trap. You could be her little henchman. Or you could be under her thrall. Stop the car, Dick.
Let go of the door now, he said in a soothing, talking down the crazy lady tone. I'm not a little anything. I haven't been under anyone's thrall since an unfortunate incident in 1923 involving a succubus from Baton Rouge without a sense of humor. The gravel would take a chunk of your hide and your pride. Just let me drive you home. And then you can call Gabriel and we can all talk about this and decide what you should do.
I'm not calling Gabriel, I said far too shrilly. I just want you to drop me off here and I'll walk home. Then I'm getting a gun and a much smarter dog. Dick reached out for my hand.
Oh, come on. Don't you trust me, Stretch?
I stared at him for a long pause. No.
Chapter 20. Dueling is a time-honored tradition among vampires and is closely monitored by the council. Do not enter into a battle without first consulting a council representative. From the Guide for the Newly Undead. Dick did not stop the car. Instead, he promised to drive me home, give me his cell phone, and let me call Gabriel the second I felt anything out of the ordinary. He had Gabriel's number saved in his phone book under Jackass. Dick also offered to let me kick him in the goods if he let anything happen to me. If this wasn't a guarantee of my safety, I don't know what was. My parents' car was parked outside the house when we got to River Oaks, but I couldn't find them anywhere. Jetty materialized next to me and started talking at a speed only birds could understand. Thrilled to see someone I knew for sure wasn't trying to kill or frame me, I tried to hug her and fell through her. Fortunately, Dick came in a few seconds later, so Jetty was the only one who saw it. Distracted, Jetty let her guard down enough to allow Dick to see her. He tried to introduce himself, but was ignored in favor of more gibbering at me. My phone rang. I shushed Jetty and picked it up. I could hear someone sobbing softly in the background. I recognized that sound. It was my mother. Mama? I yelled. I checked the caller ID, but the number was blocked. Mom?
Jane, hi, Shug, how are you?
Missy cooed from the other end of the line.
I was just talking to your folks.
Missy? Let me talk to them, I said in as cool a tone as I could manage. Let me talk to them right now.
Oh, now, Shug, they can't come to the phone. They're a little tied up,
she said, chuckling at her own little joke. Right now, you crazy bitch.
Language, Jane, language. You know, maintaining your composure is the first step in any negotiation.
I'll try to keep that in mind when I'm not dealing with a freaking sociopath, I yelled into the phone. Now let me talk to my parents.
I think you'll want to be more cordial, Jane, honey, or I might not feel quite so hospitable towards your parents, she said, her voice constricting like the coils of a snake.
Now, we're going to meet at my place in an hour. If you don't arrive promptly and in a more cooperative mood, I may have to do something drastic. Some of your daddy's favorite parts may just find themselves removed. Then he might end up being turned and, by horrible coincidence, locked in a concrete box until he goes mad with thirst.
Please, just let him go.
That's nothing compared to what I'll do with your mother, she said.
Jane, are you listening?
She asked when I didn't respond immediately.
Jane, I'm thinking.
I could hear Mama's squeals of indignation from the other end of the line. If we all survived, I was pretty sure I would never hear the end of this. So, suddenly, the mysterious deaths and explosions and my poor standing with the council made a lot more sense. It took me 35 minutes and a smashed chair or two before Dick and Jetty would let me out of the house. Dick insisted on coming with me, and I couldn't help but be grateful for it. Missy had not, after all, made the cliched supervillain demand that I come alone. I might have called Gabriel, but I didn't want to have to explain how I managed to stumble into another life-threatening situation in such a short time. Every man has his limits. When I arrived at Missy's, I tried to close the car door as quietly as possible, but Missy still yelled,
"We're round back, Shug!"
I was starting to hate being called Shug. Dick had agreed to lurk around the front yard until he heard the sounds of a struggle. I found my parents on Missy's back deck, surrounded by twinkling Christmas lights and Japanese paper lanterns. While they were bound and gagged, Missy had taken the time to set out a nice cheese tray and a chilled Chardonnay, and there was a covered presentation easel set up behind them. Maybe this was all an elaborate setup to get me to buy one of her stupid prefab houses.
"Jane," Missy chirped. "So nice to see you."
My father looked groggy and confused. Mama looked ready to chew through the gag and start screaming at somebody.
"You guys okay?" I asked.
"Have a seat. Can I get you something to drink?"
Missy offered sweetly, the picture of southern charm. I hoped that if we lived through this, it would serve as a lesson to Mama that having fancy cocktail napkins and coordinated clothing did not necessarily make you a well-adjusted person. "No, thank you." I sat next to my dad and squeezed his taped hands.
"Ahemming," pointedly.
Missy motioned to the shackles attached to my chair. I reluctantly snapped them around my wrists and jangled them, hoping Dick could discern the noise. Surely he had to recognize it.
"Well, aren't you the tricky one?"
Missy said, pouting prettily.
"Do you know how much trouble I've gone to just to get your attention? I used my powers to track you, followed you around. I lured that idiot Walter back to the scene of your pathetic fight, killed him to get the council to watch you. I played those stupid pranks on you, watched your house to make you feel uneasy, painted your car, put a little something extra in your doggy's bowl. Hell, I even shot at you."
"Shot me," I corrected her as Mama shrieked under her gag. "You actually shot me, and it hurt quite a bit."
"Oh, Shug, don't take it personally. It's not like I left any permanent scars. I just wanted to make you desperate enough, paranoid enough to want to leave town. Whether it was to get away from the council or whoever you thought was out to get you, I didn't care. I figured since you don't like your sister anyway, and we're such good girlfriends, you'd sell me the property and leave. But you just wouldn't budge. So I stepped it up. Set my precious Dickie's trailer on fire, framing you for his murder, so I could challenge you. But then he intervened, and the council let you walk away scot-free. Nothing has worked, Jane. Nothing. Do you have any idea how frustrating that is?"
"I knew it," I yelled. "I knew all that random stuff couldn't happen to one person."
"Well, subtlety has never been my strong suit,"
she said, smirking as she sipped a virulently pink cocktail. From inside the model home, I heard a voice call.
"Missy,
Are you out back?
It seems our last guest has arrived.
Missy smirked.
I believe you two know each other.
Jenny? I yelled as my sister stepped out onto the deck. Run, Jenny, get out of here.
Why? Jenny asked.
Wait, why are you all tied up? Missy, what's going on here?
You know her? I demanded.
Yes, I know her. Missy's in my Thursday night scrapbooking group.
Oh, of course she is, I groaned.
This isn't what we talked about, Missy, Jenny said, staring at our bound parents.
What do you mean, what you talked about? I demanded. You do know she's a vampire, right?
Oh, sure, Jenny rolled her eyes. Like I'd spend Thursday night scrapbooking with a vampire.
In the calmest tone I could muster, I said, Jenny, I've been waiting for a really long time to say this to you. You're a moron.
Jenny ignored me.
Jane, what exactly have you gotten us into?
I'll answer that, Missy said sweetly, just before punching Jenny.
I'm not going to say that bothered me, I told Missy as she hog-tied my dazed sister.
I thought as much.
Missy offered a vicious grin as she shoved the gag into Jenny's mouth. She turned to me and put on her sales face.
Jane, have you ever had a vision?
I had a reaction to antibiotics when I was 5 and saw tigers jumping out of the walls, I offered.
A vision,
Missy repeated, obviously annoyed.
The ability to anticipate future events and possibilities. The ambition to better oneself through the pursuit of an ideal. A goal. Vision, honey. So few people have it, living or undead. Even fewer appreciate it. Imagine my irritation when I see someone like you with a beautiful piece of property like River Oaks.
She tinkled, her laugh hard-edged.
Did you know that I own every little bit of property surrounding your acreage? I've been buying it up, a piece at a time, for almost 10 years now. In fact, I own quite a bit of property in this end of the state. The old money vampires can't seem to hold on to it. Of course, that might have something to do with the fact that I tricked them into selling or killed them in battle.
Missy bent so we were nose to nose, tilting her head so she could give me a winning smile.
Real estate is the one thing you can always count on, Jane. It's eternal, just like we are. Gold, jewels, stocks, bonds, they can fail you, but the one thing people can't live without is land.
Do you realize you based your whole evil life philosophy on a quote from Lex Luthor? I asked. How has the council not caught on to this?
Oh, the council's not nearly as all-seeing as it likes to believe.
She sighed, toying with the tiny umbrella in her glass.
I have little helpers who claim the property for me, for a fee, and a few low-level council minions who turn a blind eye to loose ends, for a fee. I guess subtlety is my strong suit.
You want to move into River Oaks?
Oh, no! I want to knock River Oaks into the ground, she said, standing with some ceremony and whipping the cover off the easel. Jane, I give you my vision.
A disturbingly pert sign read, Half Moon Meadows, a gated community for the undead, and showed a pale, sophisticated-looking couple enjoying a glass of blood on their front porch. Different graphics showed sketches of a clubhouse, a trendy bar, a blood bank, a spa, a dentist's office.
What the hell? I gaped.
Jenny made similarly distressed noises.
Isn't it fabulous? Missy squealed. I had planned to start a gated suburb for the living, but then I was turned, and I was struck by the lack of specialized housing for vampires. Realtors just can't resist a hole in the market, Jane. Half Moon Meadows will be the first community of its kind. Vampires from all over the world will come to our corner of paradise for a community that provides for their every need, every whim. If they never want to venture out into the living world again, they won't have to.
When I didn't applaud her brilliance, Missy continued,
My Deer Haven complex is just the beginning. All I need is your teeny little plot right in the center there, she said, pointing to an aerial view of the planned development. I tried to talk your Aunt Jetty into selling, but the old bat was so stubborn. When she died, I spent months trying to come up with the right way to approach you to get you to sign it over. And then you were turned. It was a sign, Jane. I had a reason to meet you, the means to follow you, a way to cause complications for you. Hell, I even went to Thursday night scrapbooking parties just to cozy up to your sister. Jenny is not a fan of yours, by the way. I glared at my sister, who refused to meet my gaze. Missy sneered. Get a couple of margaritas in her, and she becomes quite the chatty Kathy. She's been coming to me for advice on how to whisk that house out from under you, what with my real estate expertise and all. She came here tonight thinking I'd come up with some way of forcing you into signing it over for tax reasons. You know, she's been feeding me information about you for months. Your schedules, your habits, your friends' names, your favorite foods. Of course, she didn't realize all of that had changed because she's too damn dumb to figure out you're a vampire. But it was a good start. And now it's time for the final act, Jane. I tried playing nice. I tried playing dirty. And now I'm going to play rough. I'll say you came over after me in a jealous rage over Dickie, and I had to kill you in self-defense. And if the council doesn't believe that, I'll just keep talking until I find a story they do believe. You'd be amazed at what I can do to sell a story. For a long time, I stared at Missy, unable to absorb what she'd said. Let me get this straight. You tried to kill me so you could build a tacky, planned community? That is just evil. I am so going to kick your ass just as soon as I'm untied. And then maybe I'm going after Jenny.
It's not tacky, Missy hissed through clenched fangs. It's innovative.
She gripped her drink until the glass shattered in her hands, but she seemed to recover her composure as she flicked the shards away. And technically, darling, you're chained. Missy stepped over to my parents to adjust their bonds. She pinched my father's cheek until I thought blood would well from under her nails, and then slapped him lightly. I growled, but she ignored me.
Here's the deal, Janie. When I dust you, I'll gain control over River Oaks and everything you own. And then I'm going to kill your parents and your sister. And then I'm going after that boring ass of a husband and her imbecile children so there are no living heirs to claim River Oaks. That's the difference between you and me, Jane. I don't sit around whining and waiting for something to happen. I see what I want, and I take it.
Look, this entire deck is made of wood. Just stake me and get it over with so I don't have to listen to any more evil overlord speeches, I grumbled under my breath. Two-bit, dyed blonde, social-climbing huckster. Missy whirled on me, her face twisted with rage.
What did you say?
She took a step toward me. Seeing that, I said, bottled blonde.
No, not that.
She snarled and took another step away from my parents.
Nouveau riche.
I smiled nastily, watching her move farther away from my family. If I could distract her long enough, maybe Dick could sneak around the building and release them. When Missy's fangs glinted, I added, pretentious, megalomaniacal, two-faced, cheap, gigantic skank, about as real as Jenny's tan.
No, that last part, Missy seethed.
Cheerfully, I said, oh, huckster, con artist, snake oil peddler? If you were any good at sales, you wouldn't be in this position, would you? Aunt Jetty would have packed up for Florida and sold out to you. You'd be sitting pretty in River Oaks, and I would be... Missy let loose a guttural scream and kicked me square in the chest with her knockoff Jimmy Choo's. Still chained to a lawn chair, I was launched through the deck railing, landing about 20 feet away. I left an ankle-deep rut in the recently sodded yard, my head pillowed on the mound of dirt. Spitting out grass and mud, I felt a grinding throb in my shoulder. I looked down and saw a chunk of the deck jutting through my collarbone.
That is just gross, I heard Zeb say.
I looked up to see him, Dick, and Gabriel standing over me. While this was touching in a "the cavalry is here" sort of way, it didn't change the fact that my parents were now alone with an over-lip-glossed psychopath who planned on killing them. I looked up to the deck and saw empty chairs. Great. My parents were now hidden from sight by an over-lip-glossed psychopath. That was so much safer. Dick shook his head.
This is what happens when you roughhouse. It's all fun and games until somebody gets impaled.
Wearing his grim expression, Gabriel knelt next to me. He said, "This is going to hurt."
"What are you doing here?" I asked as Gabriel yanked the offending lumber from my clavicle.
"Ow!"
"I told you it was going to hurt," Gabriel said, shrugging.
"I called him," Dick said, looking sheepish. "I thought you could use some help, or at least another witness.
I would have called Andrea, too, but you never gave me her number."
"And you?" I asked Zeb as Gabriel yanked my shirt away from the wound and inspected it.
"I called him," Gabriel told me, peering up at Zeb, "though I remember asking for Jolene."
Zeb's clever reply was interrupted by Missy racing across the lawn, looking to wrap her arms around an unmoving Dick.
"Dickie, I'm so glad you're all right. I was so worried."
"Now why would you worry about me, darling?" Dick asked, his smile nasty. "Just because you torched my trailer with me inside? Why would that make you worry your pretty little head?"
Missy's mouth formed a slick, astonished "Oh."
"Now, Dickie, honey, you know I'd never..."
"Missy, we're going to have a little talk, you and I," Dickie growled.
"Now, Dickie, Gabriel, you know you're not allowed to interfere once a challenge has been made,"
she cooed, toying with the hem of Dick's federal bikini inspector t-shirt.
"And I issued a legal challenge to Jane at the council office days ago. It doesn't matter that Dick is alive. The challenge stands."
"Suddenly we're concerned with the rules?"
Dick asked in the same saccharine tone.
"Only when they work to my advantage,"
she smiled. That meant I still had to fight. Dang it. While Dick had Missy distracted, I had a small panic attack. "I haven't been a vampire for very long, but I'm pretty sure I can't toss someone like that," I said, wincing as the wound in my shoulder closed. "I want her tested for steroids."
"She's been drinking the blood of older vampires for years. It makes her the equivalent of an East German gymnast,"
Dick called over his shoulder. He glared at Missy.
"Trust me, I know."
This prompted more indignant chatter from Missy. I groaned, clutching Gabriel's arms.
"Gabriel, I don't want this to be the way you remember me. Just leave now before I get my ass handed to me by a sorority reject from hell. I'm sorry I dragged you into my weird, drama-ridden existence. I'm sorry I screwed things up so badly with you and me. I'm sorry I have the emotional maturity of a grapefruit."
He grinned, his fangs glinting.
"You don't have the emotional maturity of a grapefruit. A tangerine, maybe. But I think you've got to work your way up to grapefruit."
I smacked his chest.
"You're joking. I'm going to be beaten to death with a hot pink faux alligator handbag, and you pick now to develop a sense of humor."
"You're not going to be beaten to death," Gabriel said in a bemused, soothing tone. He held his wrist to my lips.
"Drink."
Sensing Gabriel's maneuver, Dick began arguing in a louder, more demanding tone, casting aspersions on Missy's character, business acumen, and sexual prowess. She screamed back that she faked something a lot. I didn't catch what, but I think I can guess.
"I don't think now is the time for naughty blood-swapping fun," I said, shoving Gabriel's arm away.
"Besides," I jerked my head toward Zeb, "he's watching." Zeb waved my concerns away. His eyes were glued to Dick and Missy bearing fangs and snarling insults.
"I can't tear myself away from the most frightening breakup fight I've ever seen."
Gabriel nudged his wrist toward me again.
"You'll absorb some of my strength. It will help you."
"It's just that drinking your blood, it's kind of what got me into this mess," I said.
"I didn't see you complaining when you were dying along the roadside," he huffed, "or when we were making love."
"What?" Zeb shouted.
"Zeb, shut it,"
I warned. Gabriel ran his hands through his hair, making it stand on end in a wild Beethoven that would have been hilarious under different circumstances.
"Would you please just accept help from me and stop being so
Jane?" Zeb suggested.
"Zeb,"
Gabriel warned.
"Okay, you need to back off,"
I said, poking Gabriel's chest.
"You're suffocating me. You never tell me anything unless it's your listen-to-daddy voice, which is incredibly annoying in someone you have feelings for. I never know how you feel about me, about anything, except that you like to see me naked, and you have caveman must-protect-Jane impulses. I'm not a mind reader."
"Technically, you kind of are," Zeb volunteered. We both growled at Zeb, our fangs bared.
"Shutting up,"
Zeb said, throwing up his hands and backing away.
I don't write love poems, Gabriel said. I don't cuddle. I don't spend hours on the phone cooing. No, you hang up first. I was raised in a time when if you had feelings for a woman, you proposed or you made her your mistress. I think, given the circumstances, you should give me credit for being as evolved as I am. Damned if he didn't have a point. But I would have to hand over my womanhood membership card if I ever admitted it.
You're going to make me say it, aren't you?
I threw up my arms. I don't even know what it is.
He sighed, a short snort of impatience.
I like you. You're unpredictable, and you always say what you think, even if it would be better if you didn't. You get yourself into situations that Molière couldn't think of.
Okay, okay, so you like me?
Yes. I think we should see each other on an exclusive basis, he said.
I stared at him.
I am your sire, and we've made love.
I'm familiar with your resume, I said, shushing him with another furtive look at Zeb. This is not a good time for this.
I doubt we'll ever find a good time,
he muttered, thrusting his arm against my mouth.
Now drink before Missy figures out what we're doing.
With nothing else to say, I chomped on his wrist. Gabriel yelped, prompting a smile against his skin. Unusual for me, I knew, but I could hear Missy and Dick's argument winding down. Gabriel winced as I drew huge mouthfuls of his blood. Zeb watched, coming closer and closer.
Is it going to be a Popeye thing? She eats her spinach and has the strength of 20 squinty sailors?
How have you survived this long without someone hurting you? Gabriel asked as I finished feeding. I wiped a drip from my chin and offered Zeb a red-tinged grin. He recoiled, clearly grossed out. Gabriel pulled a handkerchief from nowhere and dabbed at my mouth.
I love it when he does that, Zeb said, looking Gabe over for hidden pockets. Why can't I be a cool sleight-of-hand guy?
You've got a huge man crush on him, don't you? I said, shaking my head. Zeb measured this much sexual confusion with his fingers. The sudden drop in volume signaled that Missy had finally noticed us.
Gabriel, I do believe what you just did could be considered cheating, Missy said, her voice teasing and pouting.
Do not attempt to explain the ancient codes to me, he growled.
Missy ignored the chill in Gabriel's tone.
Then I can count on you to mind your own business and let us girls sort this out.
You can count on me to keep this farce as close to codes as possible. And if by some misfortune you happen to kill my bloodmate, I'll make you wish for dawn.
Bloodmate? What was that exactly? It sounded like something I didn't necessarily want to be. But the term seemed to have some effect on Missy. The supreme Tony Robbins bred confidence melted away for a second before she flashed a guileless grin.
I'll just let you two say your goodbyes.
She's really good at that intimidating smack talk stuff, I said, watching her flounce away. Any advice?
Keep your hands up, Gabriel said. Protect your neck and chest at all times. And don't try any of those fancy woman self-defense tactics. She probably took the same classes when she was alive, and she'll be expecting them.
Before I could retort, Gabriel crushed me close and gave me a bloodless, friendly smack on the lips. He smiled.
For luck.
Idiot, I said before grinning broadly and crushing his mouth to mine.
We need to pick new pet names for each other, he muttered as I hefted myself up from the ground.
Honestly, how did someone who never once got into a fight in school end up getting into so many of them as an adult? Missy was standing in the middle of the yard, in a worn circle of dirt. I felt like that first anonymous fighter who gets killed off in the Jean-Claude Van Damme cage fighter movies. Missy smiled, and I circled.
I guess we're going to have that little cat fight after all, Missy said, rolling her shoulders.
I'm not worried. If you kill me, my dead great-aunt will fix it so you spend eternity looking for your car keys, I said.
I felt the power of Gabriel's blood coursing through me, warming me, giving me that drunk driver's confidence that maybe I could make it home. The burns on my arms had finally healed over, and the wound in my shoulder was a shiny, slightly sore memory.
Question.
Did you actually wear that juicy couture tracksuit with this in mind? Missy scowled.
If we're going to talk fashion, Shug, I think we need to start with those Payless specials you wear.
Ow, I wear cheap shoes. You got me, I deadpanned.
Let's just cut the banter and fight. I feel the need to warn you. I'm a hair puller.
I feel the need to warn you, Missy said, before simply punching me right in the eye.
I responded by collapsing to the ground. That'd show her.
Can someone punch you in the head so hard that it actually decapitates you? Because Missy came close. From my position on the ground, I could see the heel of Missy's shoe on a collision course with my throat. I rolled, ramming into her shins and knocking her off balance. She fell on her butt with an outraged, ugh, and kicked up, launching me about 20 feet in the air. Giddy from the fall, I landed on my feet, but didn't have time to avoid the crushing kick to my solar plexus. I stumbled back, making a sound not found in human language, and struck out, punching her in the eye. She swung blind, dragging her frosted pink nails down my chest. I swiped my fingers under my shirt and found blood streaked across them. I grunted and stomped on her foot. She screamed and kicked me in the shin. I had no choice but to pull her hair, which was remotely shameful, even though I'd warned her. But it was surprisingly effective. Missy squealed and snaked her hands against my scalp, yanking hard. And soon, we were just rolling around on the ground, cursing and screeching and ripping out handfuls of hair. Without super hearing, I wouldn't have heard Zeb whisper, "This is the coolest thing I have ever seen." "Maybe they'll get muddy," Dick said. "Please, Lord, let them get muddy." Gabriel turned on them. "You two do realize this is a battle to the death, yes?"
Neither seemed particularly embarrassed.
After several ringing blows to the head, Missy tossed me in a limp pile at the feet of Dick, Gabriel, and Zeb. Gabriel helped me to my feet and gave me an encouraging slap on the back. Dick, however, took a hint from Burgess Meredith's performance in Rocky.
"Would you kick her ass already?"
Dick said, shoving me back toward Missy.
"Come on, Stretch, man up. You can do better than this. Get mad."
I nodded.